Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. The brains behind the long-running series Trading Spaces are experimenting with yet another way to get television series off the ground. Put it first on Facebook. On the Map, a travelogue from Barcelona, has been on Facebook's map for about a month. And there's a social twist to this journey. Banyan Productions Chief Executive Jan Dickler and 7FO Chief Executive David Russick join me next. You've never seen a doctor on television like Doc McStuffins. She's animated, 6 years old, and stuffed objects are her patients. She's a headline attraction on Disney Junior, the new network for kids and their parents, starting next Friday. Get the diagnosis next half hour from creator and executive producer Chris Nee. Also ahead, George and Nick Clooney arrested and released within hours today, and Nerds Arrive on TBS. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, live from New York on Blog Talk Radio. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Thanks for being with us this Friday afternoon, wrapping the week up with us. This is a show about the world of television. 48 degrees outside the New York metro area at the top of the hour, and we invite you to be part of the conversation. Two ways to do it. One is give us a call at 1-646-652-2906. That's 1-646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're texting us live on Blog Talk Radio. The other way, our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. It's open for you to pop questions and comments to our guests or talk about the world of TV in general with your fellow Blog Talk Radio participants. Either way, we want to hear from you. We'll hear from the people behind On the Map, premiering on Facebook before television. They're live from Philadelphia, and they'll join us after these news notes. George Clooney has been all over television this week talking about the plight of people in Sudan. Now he and his father, former newscaster and Good Life TV anchor Nick Clooney, were released from U.S. Secret Service custody 45 minutes ago after they, along with NAACP President Ben Jealous, Martin Luther King III, and others, were arrested this morning protesting outside the Sudanese embassy in Washington, D.C. The protesters want Sudan President Omar al-Bashir to allow humanitarian aid into his country's southern region. The protests happened the day after George Clooney discussed Sudan with President Obama and members of Congress. The Clooneys were released after paying a fine. I quote, "It's my first arrest. Thanks for asking," George Clooney told reporters after being released. "And let's hope it's my last." Get ready for a uniting of nerds next year on TBS. The unity will come from King of the Nerds, a competition series organized in part by Fraction Star co-creator Rick Reinbach, who was on this program Monday. Teams of nerds will be tested on their ingenuity and pop culture knowledge, with Revenge of the Nerds co-stars Robert Carradine and Curtis Armstrong set as co-hosts. And that's our news notes for now. Incidentally, on the George Clooney situation, we do not know yet whether the other people involved in the protest this morning at the Sudanese embassy, Ben Jealous of the NAACP, Martin Luther King III, have been released as yet. If anybody's out there who has any details about that, please put that in the chat room, and we'll let folks know before this hour is up. Our first guests today are dealing with a unique way to get a television show on the air. Put it first on Facebook. The program is called On the Map. It's been on Facebook for about a month. Joining us live from Philadelphia, the head of Banyan Productions, the company behind this series and the award-winning Trading Spaces, Jan Dickler. Jan, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Simon. Appreciate it.
And joining you and us live from Philadelphia as well, the head of a company called 7FO that is providing the interactive social side of On the Map, David Russek. David, welcome in.
Thank you, Simon. Appreciate it.
Jan, you've been around the block for a long time producing television series like Trading Spaces. You know a lot of networks that take your programs. What made you decide, let's do this on Facebook first before we go on a network?
I thought David had a really interesting premise, which was to put social media inside the storytelling, not just tell the story and then have people respond to it afterwards, but really try to bake it into the format. And that was a challenge that we just couldn't pass up. So we worked quite a bit on it, and we're really excited about it. I think it's a really interesting process that's going to inform the way a lot of television is produced in the future.
David, when Jan is talking, baking the social element in, what's he referring to?
Well, Simon, what that means is that generally when you see a current social television initiative, you generally look at two screens, a screen where the television show is linear, it doesn't have any dynamic elements, a million people would see the same experience. And then on the social side, the second screen, you'd have the ability to have some interaction, some ability to connect with your friends within, say, a Facebook environment. What we're doing here is quite remarkable and different. What we're actually doing is baking the social inside the show. So what that means is that when I go into a show which is being delivered over Facebook, okay, what I'm able to do is have the ability for my social graph to be in or be understood by the television show, and the television show now has the ability to dynamically generate itself. So what you've got is the ability for me and six of my friends, for instance, to be inside the show differently than the way you would be with, say, six of your friends.
By being inside the show, David, do you mean that they would appear somehow on Facebook while the show is going on? Would they appear on screen in some way?
You're actually appearing, as an example, inside the actual TV show, all right? Or you're interacting similar to the way they do gaming mechanics in a game, say a Zynga game like Farmville and such, where you actually have the game and the interactivity is inside the game. The same thing's happening here, where the interactivity is inside the TV show, and my ability to connect with six of my friends allows me to get six of my friends inside the show, and a storyteller like Jan and his group of Bannon are able to use this convention as a way to increase engagement for the audiences as they enter into the show and don't just sit passively back and watch, but they're able to go ahead and inside the show, as part of the show, have reasons that are part of the storyline to go ahead and have their friends come inside the show. So they're sitting literally and metaphorically next to the characters while the characters are on their journey and engaging in the same activity that the characters may be doing that, you know, is part of the actual storytelling. An example of that would be a souveniring convention that the Bannon folks came up with. Jan, I'm not sure if you want to give a little bit of an explanation on that.
Well, Simon, I think what's cool about the show is it starts, like all good TV shows, with some insight. And on the map, the insight on the map is that when you're a young person in college and you're heading off to a different place, a different country, to gain an experience, you're really trying to equip yourself so that you can come back and really have an impact in life, try to supercharge your educational experience. So we took that insight. We hadn't really seen it done in television and expressed that way, and flew over to Barcelona, and we were able to spend time with some amazing young people who were over there doing just what I just said. And it occurred to us when we were in that process that when you're traveling, you like to give people souvenirs. So what we did is we asked each of them to find a souvenir, and essentially they presented it to our show host, Lisa Roberts. And it's such a great convention of going from something that occurred in reality to something that essentially becomes virtualized and that anybody on Facebook can give as a gift to any of their friends. So it's a very interesting process of going from what is really occurring in reality to this virtualized process to something that scales really well and is just a lot of fun for the audience.
On the Map has been running on Facebook for the last month and will continue through mid-April, and the people behind On the Map are with us. Jan Dickler, he is the chief executive of Bannon Productions, the company behind the making of the series and other series such as Trading Spaces, which had a long run on TLC. Also, its spin-off Trading Spaces, Boys vs. Girls, which was on both NBC and the former Discovery Kids Network, now The Hub. Also with us, David Rusek. He is the head of a company called 7Echo, which is involved with interactive and social television services. And they're both with us live from Philadelphia this half hour on Tomorrow We Televise on a Friday afternoon. Tommy Applebaum here with you from New York on Blog Talk Radio. We appreciate you being aboard, and we invite you to begin the dialogue inside our show. You do it by calling 1-646-652-2906. That's 1-646-652-2906. Or pop into our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. We welcome Ken Rhines into our room. Thanks for joining us. Either way, phone a chat room, we invite you to be involved. David, once a person is involved inside the show, as you say, are they just involved with their friends for that particular episode, or are they involved for good?
Well, the way we structure this is similar to a normal series, a television series. There's 12 episodes, okay? And when you're looking at the arc over the 12 episodes, when you're telling a story, you do it a certain way to be able to build up in the early part of the episodes and then have the ability to end properly with say, the cliffhanger or whatever. We took that same approach with the levels of interactivity and the levels of social activity within the show. So in the beginning, very simple. You're able to see that your face can show and your Facebook graphic can literally show itself inside of the TV show. All right, so basic simple activities, conventions in the first couple episodes. And then we build from there. It gets progressively more interesting in ways that the audience member and their friends can find themselves literally showing up next to the characters or literally mimicking what the characters are doing with their friends through their social graph.
Jen, this program is about young people in Barcelona, Spain, in time for a festival. How does this social or interactive feature impact the way you do the show and also the way that the people you present are interacting with the show?
Well, I think we're using young people because we know that they're just going to interact with it, and they're going to really relate to the people that we chose to follow. And one of the conventions of On the Map is that when you're on the map and you're in a different place, you bring the audience, friends, people watching on Facebook, to your favorite spot. Your favorite spot is probably not a tourist trap. It's just a place that meant something to you and that you felt was really important in your life. And so we really tried to capture that. We shot seven people with really interesting stories. We call them loopers. They're in the loop. They were very personal stories. We really focused on specific kinds of behaviors and desires that young people want. They really relate with people that were engaging with them through Facebook. And I think we have that. And they form a complete variety of young people. They're all there for different reasons. And as you watch it, as you engage in it in Facebook, you can begin to relate to which one of them is closest to you and which one of them is kind of living the life you would kind of live. So I think we focused a lot on it. You know, it's very different than telling a traditional television story, a different kind of episode. You really have to focus on this concept of engagement. And I think we also had an obligation to take advantage of the platform that Dave has worked so hard to develop so that we could really force engagement. And someone just wouldn't sit back and watch it. They'd look at it and it would spur something in them. They'd form a physical reaction with what they were seeing and would leap into this environment that he's created and really engage with other people about the characters they were seeing.
Do either of you know how many people have been engaged to this point, whether the audience is growing, staying stable, rising and falling from episode to episode, how they are being engaged? What's the result so far?
Well, the results have been very, very positive. It's been growing. It's only been out for several weeks. So what we've been seeing is not only a steady growth of audience members, but also a steady growth of audience members that reach out and get their friends into the show by simply within the app, the platform, saying, I want to get six of my friends inside the show. And through Facebook, through the messaging, they're notified, the friends are notified that their particular friend wants to have them into their what's called a core group, okay? That's been tremendously successful. And what we've been seeing is the elements of the storytelling that also take advantage of this social graph, meaning if Jan is in his episode talking about how one of the characters in Barcelona gives a souvenir because it reminds them of something, okay, you essentially take that same essence, that same emotional element, and now you're able to give that to your Facebook audience, and then the individual watching it is able to say, well, I think this person, these five friends of mine, have the same qualities of this particular character, so I'm going to send them this souvenir. And what we've been seeing is a very solid growth and rapid uptake of once people realize that this is not just an experience where you sit back and you watch like any normal television that's been around for 50-some years, and this has elements of it. In gaming, they call these gaming mechanics, where the interactivity in your social network is infused inside the game. Since we're not dealing with a game here, so we don't call these gaming mechanics, we call them social propagation techniques that are built into the narrative of the TV show, we've been seeing tremendous success as people understand that this is not just a linear passive experience, but it's an interactive experience that dynamically changes, meaning my experience is going to be different than yours and Jan's and everybody else's. Plus, it's an experience that I can get my friends involved and bring them actually into the show. And it's been masterfully crafted by Jan and his storytellers to be able to take advantage of those conventions. So tremendously successful so far, and you know, we expect it to continue growing and growing.
I just wanted to add that I know it has a lot of international adoption. It's been in, I know, close to 46 countries. So we're seeing a lot of global adoption of it, too, which is really exciting, since really that's the heart of the show and the concept of it. And it's great to be able to produce something that so instantly is traveling around the world, and that you're just seeing a lot of people in different places beginning to adopt it and use some of the dynamics that David's talking about.
There's also an advertiser involved, HTH Worldwide. It's a healthcare information company. How are they participating in the program, and what's their reaction to the results so far?
Well, you know, what's amazing is that their mission, the key for HTH is that their mission is that they're providing healthcare and opportunities for that for young people and for colleges all over the world. So what's great is that their mission really embodies what we were able to create in terms of a format. And the concept is that the format ought to really resonate with that mission, and I think it does. And I think that the longer that you're engaged in it, and the more episodes you get into it, and as you do some of the things that David was talking about, and you're souveniring and gifting, I think you get the sense that travel is a really positive experience for a young person. It's important in terms of the way that they orient themselves and how it sets the rest of their trajectory of their college preparation and their careers.
And more specifically,
Go ahead.
I was going to say, more specifically, since they were in earlier, meaning they were in during the earlier stages of development of the show, we have been able to craft very unique ways to go ahead and not only have their branding show up inside the show, but we've also created what we call bridges that allow audience members to move from the show into other environments which would have Facebook branding specifically brought to by the brand. So some very unique things we're doing here, and I think the response has been very positive so far for that, you know, for the folks at HTH.
On the Map is currently in its first month on Facebook before it goes to television. We'll talk about where it's going to go on TV in a bit. And the people behind the program are with us today. From Banyan Productions, the people making the program, Chief Executive Dan Dickler, and from 7Echo, the company providing the interactive and social TV elements of it, Chief Executive David Rusek. They're with us live from Philadelphia on Tomorrow Be Televised. We're happy to have you with us this half hour on Blog Talk Radio. If you have a question or comment for either of our guests, give us a call. It's 1-646-652-2906. That's 1-646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. In our next half hour, we'll go live to Los Angeles, and we'll talk to Chris Nee. She is the creator and executive producer of one of the new attractions of the new network, Disney Junior. It premieres a week from today. We have Chris on today, and on Monday, the chief programmer of that network, Nancy Cantor, joins us live and exclusive. So tune us in for it. It's coming up right here on Blog Talk Radio. Jan, Banyan Productions has done a lot of work over the years, and being an independent production company, you've had a chance now to see all the new ways you can get a television series on the air. You can get it on Hulu, you can get it on Facebook, you can get it on possibly on Amazon. There's JustTheStory.tv, there's Wisecast Television. We had Mobcaster, the way to put new pilots and television series on the air using public funding on our Kickstarter. What do you make of this environment, and what do you think about Facebook's ultimate potential to get new television series going?
Well, it's amazing, really. It's you know, again, if you sell it in a great insight and your job and your passion is to form physical reactions with the viewer, there's no better way to measure those physical reactions and to see them take light and to see them collide in, we call them aspirational collisions, than you do in a social media environment. So as an old-time producer, I'm seeing a lot of dynamics that you just can't see. It's hard to watch people in your living rooms engage with your shows, but you're much closer to it as a producer in social media. And so, frankly, it's been electrifying.
And when you have all of this, plus new networks like the networks that Comcast announced recently, Magic Johnson's Aspire, Baby First Americas, which is going on April 1st, we had them on our show, people behind that program on our show Monday, Sean Combs' Revolt, the new Robert Rodriguez Network, and as I said before, now the opportunity to maybe fund shows to the West, as well as make shows. What did you've been running a production company, look at all this. Do you see this? Do you think we are seeing an independent television movement happen, the likes of which we've never seen before?
You know, if you're watching the adoption of tablets, especially mostly iPad, and the dynamics of the mechanisms and the changes in resolution and how you can actually touch those screens and bring them to you a foot and a half away from you and how easy it is to watch that content and interact with it, there's just isn't any doubt that seeing a platform emerging that as storytellers is something you really want to embrace and adopt. But I want to caution that it's, and I think David and I would laugh about this, it isn't like creating a traditional format. You really have to understand how an audience, a person, a viewer, uses it, how that person transforms themselves into an engager and how in that one person they're really using different dynamics. When we started in TV 19 years ago, forming a physical reaction in a viewer was having them laugh or cry. And now when you form a physical reaction in that same person, really you can measure it in the form of a click. It's just very different, and you have to be aware of it. And I think it requires just a different way to go about it, and something that we've spent quite a bit of time in terms of developing on the map with David and trying to understand and bring to that experience so that it's entertaining.
And David, what does this tell you about Facebook's potential or possibility for launching new television series before TV, especially when Facebook itself is now available on connected TV sets and organizations like Fios TV are now putting Facebook itself on the TV set?
Well, I think that there's tremendous potential. Potential not only for the ability to have a tremendous reach and distribution, right, but tremendous potential to move the form to take advantage of the actual environment that it's in. So if you look at traditional television, according to some of the latest Nielsen numbers, I mean, people watch TV through actual TV devices, 288 million people in the U.S., about 143 million view TV shows over the Internet. Now, we all know that the Internet is a two-way vehicle. We all know that the Internet, through Facebook, has the ability, with a couple clicks, to connect your friends inside of an experience. I think the tremendous potential in front of us all, including the audience, is to have the Facebook environment become the vehicle by which new forms of entertainment, new forms of social television or social cinema come to life, because now you have the ability to bring your social networking inside of the TV show. Now, Simon, we've already seen this with gaming. If you look at companies like Zynga and popular social games such as Farmville, such as Mafia Wars, you've had a transformation of what the actual game means. And what I mean by that is you put infuse the social inside of the experience. Well, if you're watching a television show over the Internet, to Facebook, now you have the ability to fuse the social environment inside the television show or inside of a narrative. And that's extremely exciting. And what's even more exciting is now you have people who understand craft, like Jan and his team of storytellers, being able to think progressively about how to do that and now how to tell a story in different ways, much like they did in the 50s, right, when they had really progressive shows like I Love Lucy or Dick Van Dyke happening. And most people today would think, well, those are really progressive, but at the time they were, because they were using techniques and conventions that were unheard of, namely producing shows that had multiple cameras capturing multiple environments. So through technology, they essentially advanced the form of the narrative. I think that same opportunity exists now with Facebook potentially poised to be at the helm of that. And it's tremendously, tremendously exciting.
A little aside, both shows were produced by independent production companies. I Love Lucy by Desi Liu and Dick Van Dyke by Sheldon Leonard's production company. Also the Danny Thomas Show, Make Room for Daddy, and so on. Jan, Greg, when On the Map completes its run on, thank you. When On the Map completes its run on Facebook, where does it go on television? Have any channels come calling to take the show? I would think Travel Channel would be a likely suspect.
Well, it's an amazing insight that we stumbled upon, and thanks to the help of really the sponsor, because they really led us in that direction. And you're right. I first want the universal insight, and there's so many kids traveling all over the world and from different parts of the world into the United States that we think there's an amazing format in it. And there have been I think you're going to see it placed really well, and you're going to see great adoption with it. It's going to be, I think, a very powerful television series. But I also think that it's going to have a great run on the Internet, and we have some great ideas about where to shoot a second season with it. And I think we've learned so much from the first season that we can really amp it up. And again, just remember, it's traveling all around the world. So the adoption, the viewers, the users, the Facebook Facebooking of it is happening. So I think we're really just at the beginning of that, but I think you're right to say that if you have a good format and it's very entertaining and it's attracting people, then it's going to leap different marketplaces, that intellectual property, and certainly that's what we're planning for.
And David, what's your next project at 7Echo that involves television?
Well, we've got several projects right now. One that's focused in the sports arena that's zeroed in on the upcoming World Cup, and we've got another project that's focused in the music arena that we're very, very excited about that would be similar to what you'd expect on a music talent show, but imagine doing that all within the confines of Facebook. So we're very excited about some of these opportunities and continuation of On the Map in the second and third seasons.
On the Map, hopefully the first of many seasons ahead, both on Facebook and television, will continue on Facebook through April 19th. For more details, go right to Facebook.com and go from there. Jan Dickler, the chief executive of Banyan Productions, the company making the program, and 7Echo chief executive David Rusek, thank you both very much for joining us in Philadelphia. Congratulations on getting this very unique project off the ground, and hopefully many more seasons both on TV and on the web.
Thanks so much. Appreciate you having us.
Thanks, Simon.
A pleasure, both of you. Take care. Have a great St. Pat's weekend.
You too.
Take care. Bye.
Jan Dickler, David Rusek, joining us live from Philadelphia. This is Tomorrow Will Be Televised, and we are the interradio program that covers the world of the tube. We are with you Mondays and Fridays, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Coming up in our next half hour, we go live to the West Coast, and we speak with the creator and executive producer of one of the first attractions of the new network, Disney Junior. It premieres a week from today, and that attraction is Doc McStuffins. It's an animated series from the brain of Chris Nee. We'll hear Chris live from Los Angeles shortly. And we will hear live on Monday from the chief executive of Disney Junior, Nancy Kanter. She will join us live for an exclusive interview the week of that network's launch. Also, we still hope to have somebody from the new Kiefer Sutherland Fox series Touch, which premieres next Thursday night. And we will have more of the world of interactive and connected TV from the Senior Vice President, David Adams. 90-minute edition of Tomorrow Be Televised coming your way Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on BTR. Remember, you can catch us anytime, 24-7, on our homepage. It's www.blogtalkradio.com/SimonApple04. www.blogtalkradio.com/SimonApple04. And you can check out our podcast 24-7 as well. You can download to any mobile device from iTunes.com and other websites arranged by Sonovite. When you do, you get bios and color headshots of our guests, scenes from the shows and the networks and projects they work on. So check out Tomorrow Be Televised on podcast. More than 22,000 downloads so far this year. If you're listening to us on podcast right now, we appreciate it. Keep the downloads coming and tell your friends as well. When we come back, Chris Nee of the new Disney Junior series Doc McStuffins joins us live from Los Angeles. She'll do so after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You are connected to the best internet radio around. You'll find it on www.blogtalkradio.com with 8 million listeners around the world every month and growing. It's your home for World Footprints tonight with a unique guest, National Geographic author John Francis, who, believe it or not, spent 17 years in silence. You will hear the sound of his amazing story tonight, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Well, in the second half of Tomorrow Be Televised, Simon Applebaum here with you live from New Web, New York. 48 degrees at the top of the hour. Happy to have you aboard this day before St. Patty's Day. Erin Gobrah to all of you. And we invite you to be part of the program. If you have some questions or comments for our next guest this half hour, give us a call. Number is 1-646-652-2906. That's 1-646-652-2906. Or check into our chat room, as Ken Rhines and Rick Webb have done. So use the room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Either way, sound off, and we will hear you. If you are a parent and your child has a stuffed animal or toy that is a little on the sick side, there is now a doctor that can treat them. It's an animated doctor. It's Doc McStuffins. The doc is a she, and she starts making calls next Friday on the new network Disney Junior, 24-hour service on the channel that used to be called SoapNet. Disney Junior will be available in millions of households on cable and satellite around the country. And joining us live is the creator and executive producer of Doc McStuffins. She had a great collaboration a long time back with Bill Cosby on the long-running award-winning series Little Bill for Nickelodeon. And she's with us now, Chris Nee. Chris, great to have you aboard.
It's so great to be here.
How did Doc McStuffins come about?
Well, I've been writing for kids for about 15 years, but this show ended up being a very personal show and a show that I probably would never have come up with without having become a mom. Basically, I have a 5-year-old son now, but when he was a little bit before 2 years old, he got asthma. And he was spending a lot of time in the doctor's office. And, you know, it's just one of those moments as a mom where I thought, why hasn't somebody done a show that demystifies this process that every kid goes through, whether they have asthma or not, of spending a ton of time in a doctor's office? And then I realized, well, why don't I do that? Because that's what I do. I make kids' TV. So I really made this show for him, but I'm excited to share it with everyone else.
And how did it get to be one of the first attractions of a new network that launches a week from today?
Well, part of it is just good timing, which you never know when you get started on these things. We went through almost 2 years of development, and then, of course, animation takes a very long time, so we've been in production for almost 2 years. So who knew at the beginning that this was, I don't even know if they were talking about the channel back when we started. And then we were lucky enough, of course, to catch the eye of the upper-ups at Disney, and they seemed very excited about the show and really, really got behind it in a way that every show runner dreams about, and they told us about 6 months ago that we were looking to be the launch show, and that's an incredible position to be in.
So tell us about Doc McStuffins. What kind of life does she lead at age of six, and what kind of escapades will she get into while making house calls?
Well, she is a six-year-old girl who can talk to her stuffed animals and toys, and which I think is every kid's little fantasy. But the twist on this show is that she actually is a doctor for them. Her mother's a pediatrician, so you sort of get the idea where she got this. And, you know, she's a kid who has her own little fantasy life and a stethoscope that has magic, and she's probably headed for a very great career in medicine when she gets older. But for now, she's doing the important work of taking care of her toys. You know, when I pitched the show, I pitched it saying that I really wanted to create the cheers of the preschool set. I'm a great believer that you want to start out with something that's got a lot of heart and a great message, but I also I really believe in strong storytelling for little kids, in being funny and going for real drama, and going for real characters, and that is what this show has turned out to be in a wonderful way for me. I hope everyone else agrees.
And since you mentioned Cheers, of course, the place where everybody knows your name.
Exactly. I mean, there won't be drinking on our show, but I think it is that sense of this community of madcap characters who know each other and know each other's foibles, and also get broken in all the ways the toys do, and here is this character who gets to take care of them, and I do think it's what every little kid dreams about. It certainly was for me.
As an adult, Chris, when you create, develop, and write an animated series like this, how do you get inside the minds of kids? Do you draw upon your own experiences, now your parents, your son, other kids, your writing team? How do you put together, you know, not only the situations, but how they evolve?
It's a really good question. I think there are certain writers who are just inherently have that plug into what kids in this age group are thinking. I think one of the right ways that the best people do it is that I don't think that much about necessarily writing for this. I'm not thinking about the box of I'm writing for 2 to 7. I'm creating these characters and just playing them out and trying to make myself laugh and tell the stories that I want to hear. There's no question with a 5-year-old now at home who's my target audience, I definitely let him see all of the rough versions of the show, and it's really interesting to see what he laughs at and what he responds to. But for the most part, I just have always had a sense of, a sense of playfulness. But, of course, I write for older age groups, too, and I've had a whole career in reality TV, which for a lot of people feels like a very strange career. For me, I think documentary TV, when it's great, it's all about how unique people are, and that's the stuff that's universal. It's all about seeing people and going, wow, I would not believe that if it wasn't on a documentary. And I think that's, if you can take the best of that to kids writing and recognize how completely interesting little kids are, then to me it's all part of the same continuum.
Doc McStuffins will be one of the first attractions of Disney Junior, the new 24-hour network that premieres on cable and satellite all over the country a week from today. Chris Nee is the creator and executive producer. She's with us live from Los Angeles on Tomorrow Be Televised. Happy to have you aboard for Friday afternoon. Simon Applebaum from New York on Blog Talk Radio. If you have a question or comment for Chris, give us the call. And you use this number, 1-646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number's good anywhere. You're catching us live on Blog Talk Radio. Chat room open as well. Simon Apple 04 by name. So either way, sound off. We want to hear from you. You are the first animator, Chris, that I've talked to on this program that has another side of a career in reality television. You worked on Deadliest Catch, as a matter of fact. How do you blend the two? Do you bring, let's say, animation skills to what you do on documentary television or reality TV and vice versa?
I think I really do. I mean, obviously, it's a very strange thing to have Deadliest Catch and The Casino and The Real Roseanne Show on the same resume as The Backyardigans and The Wonder Pets. And in fact, I've often been doing the two things at the same time. I was in Alaska, you know, in the middle of the Bering Sea, literally at night writing the first Wonder Pets hour-long special while I was doing the Deadliest Catch during the day. So it definitely has been an exciting ride in that sense. And I do take for me, it's the same basic skills. It's storytelling and finding what's unique about characters. And so I think I take the skills from one side to the other, you know, transferring both ways. My ability to really know how to create a story from scratch as a writer helped me a great deal, particularly in the post process in documentary TV, because I knew how to tell a story, so I was always logging in my head, well, that piece will get me, you know, sort of a turn at the first act that's going to get me into the second act that's, you know, it's driving a story forward. And as I was saying earlier, I think my love of the uniqueness of human beings is part of what makes my brand of writing, particularly young kids' TV, a little unique. And there are some other people who write the way I do, but there are a lot of shows for young kids that are that go a little bit more for the perfect view of what a kid this age is. And I'm looking for the quirks.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, you know, for example, we have a character whose name is Chili, and he's a stuffed snowman, and he's a hypochondriac, and I love sort of pushing that boundary. We don't call him a hypochondriac, but, you know, if you watch the show for a while, you're going to realize that piece of him. And it was one of those moments where I put that out there, and I thought, I wonder, is Disney going to go on this ride with me, or are they going to clamp me down? And Disney just kept saying, this is great. This is old school Disney. This is strong storytelling, strong characters, and they let me go. And the truth is, in testing, we found out the kids love that character. They don't have a name for it, but they get what is unique about people.
Yeah. I was about to mention that much of your previous work, Chris, was for Nickelodeon, shows like Little Bill, you mentioned the Wonder Pets. How different is it working for Disney, in light of what you just said, versus Nickelodeon or other networks?
It really depends on the show, I think, more than the network. First of all, I'll say that Disney has been absolutely the perfect place for this show. They've just been so supportive and let me push the boundaries and envelopes. And I will say that a lot of what's been going on in preschool TV has been the interactive shows. And obviously kids love those shows, and I've written for a lot of them, and there's a huge place for them. But I kept worrying that somebody was going to say, I was sort of waiting for somebody to say, okay, now you have to have her talk to camera and ask three questions. And I really didn't want to do that kind of show. And Disney was definitely at a place where they were ready to let me not go into the interactive stuff. So, both networks are fabulous places to work. And more than anything, you're working with specific people on specific shows. And we all sort of migrate from place to place.
Speaking of people who have been working in the field, you have a very good one who works with you as one of your key directors. His name is Norton Vergian. Those who know of him know that he did a wonderful job with a show called Rugrats.
Show we like to call Rugrats.
He's your director. And what's it like working with him?
He's an amazing guy, and the day that he came in was one of the most exciting days of my life, because he not only agreed to direct our show, which for me was just felt like winning the lottery, but he also agreed to move to Ireland to do so. So this is perfect for our St. Patrick's Day broadcast. We actually, our production company is Brown Bag Films in Ireland, and I pitched the show directly to Disney, and then we brought on Brown Bag Films, and they just are the most amazing production company. I can't imagine working with a group of more talented, more lovely people. And Norton agreed to pick up his life and move to Ireland, where he's been living in Dublin for, I think we're coming up on 2 years. And I've been back and forth quite a bit as well. And he's just such an extraordinarily talented, kind, and generous guy. He's been an incredible collaborator.
And incidentally, Brown Bag Films has been twice nominated for the Academy Award for some of its shorts, and also we're seeing a little mini revolution here. There's quite a lot of Irish done animation that is coming
there
on
is.
Disney, not only on Disney Junior, but also on Disney Channel.
Yes, and Nickelodeon. I have to say, the Irish. There was a real history of animation in Ireland. Some of the big animation houses were there in the 70s and 80s, and then they closed down. A lot of the Irish came to the States, and there was always a high level of brogue going on in animation here in the States. And then as the economy really roared back at one point in Ireland, a lot of those people went back to Ireland, and some amazing companies have showed up there. There's just so much work happening in Dublin. I am biased. I just think Brown Bag is right there at the top of the heap. Their visuals are extraordinary. When you see the show, it's kind of amazing that the level of animation that they are producing on a weekly basis.
Also, there's another organization that you're involved with in making this particular show. It's the Hollywood Health and Society Division of USC Annenberg. Tell us what they do and how they're involved as consultants.
Yeah, they're an amazing group that they work on promoting and helping people in Hollywood deal with medical issues. And they've primarily in the past worked on adult shows. They often provide the consultants for, back for ER and for Grey's Anatomy and all of those kinds of things. Or if any show were going to do some type of episode that dealt with a medical issue, they would they might contact them, and they will connect them with an expert in the field. For us, they came on very early because we knew that we weren't going to be doing one episode special. We were going to do an entire series where, based on the premise, we were going to be dealing with medical issues throughout and dealing with them for such an interesting age group. And so they consulted. They came on at the beginning and gave us some really wonderful conferences about here are some subjects that are important to kids this age. And then every episode we sort of checked in with them, and sometimes we had real questions. How do you describe allergies to kids this age? And they put us in touch with an expert. And what was great is the experts were not media experts. They would find us an expert in that field. There were times, for example, with the allergies where they came back and said, you know what, kids know this stuff these days. They have three kids in class who can't touch peanuts because they have allergies, so you can actually go further with the explanation. But they were incredibly helpful, and we know we're doing a show on most shows for kids this age, if you do a medical episode, that's a very special episode, and you do all this work to make sure you're not stepping on any bad information. For us, we're doing an entire series that way, so it was nice to know that somebody was there really making sure that we were putting good information in the world and talking about things in the right way.
In fact, once the show goes on, there is going to be an interactive web spot where kids can actually nurture toys back to health into the fun little anime
Absolutely.
Style.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Look, I had a stuffed Snoopy when I was a kid, and he had his arm ripped, and he was dirty as could be, and I was convinced that I spoke to him, and more importantly, convinced that he spoke to me. So I would have loved to have had a clinic like that when I was a kid. So it makes total sense.
Chris Nee is the creator and executive producer of Doc McStuffins. It premieres a week from today as part of Disney Junior, the 24-hour network for the Disney folks that will be running on cable and satellite all over the country. She's with us live from Los Angeles on Tomorrow We Televise. Happy you're with us on this pre-St. Patty's afternoon on a good Friday here in New York, where it's 48 degrees at the top of the hour. Simon Applebaum live on Blog Talk Radio. We appreciate your participation. Just call us at 1-646-652-2906. That's 1-646-652-2906. So pop into our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Must ask you about Little Bill. What was it like to work with Bill Cosby on that long-running and a wonderful Nickelodeon series?
It really was a fantastic show. I got incredibly lucky with that. I was kind of on the early side of my career as a writer. I had started at Sesame Workshop when it was Children's Television Workshop. And worked in the international department and traveled around the world, bringing Sesame Street around the world. Great job. But I wanted to be a writer, and there's a man named Josh Selig, and he runs a company called Little Airplane, and they made Wonder Pets. And he and I sat next to each other at Sesame, and he ended up going over as the head writer for the last season of Little Bill. And it was a show that I had been watching and just saying, they're doing something so interesting in this. There's such reality in the way they're dealing with this kid's life instead of kind of Warner Brothers sort of goofy, cartoony world. And I was really intrigued with it. And then one day I got a call that said, do you want to come in and help us finish the third season of this? And I was like, yeah, I would love to. And I started out with one episode and ended up writing 10 episodes that sort of finished out the group there. And it was a great learning experience. Obviously, working with Bill Cosby is like working with an icon. It's an incredible thing, and he has such a great sense of kids and TV and what's important and how to have fun while you're telling stories that are important and sweet. And there are some other amazing people over there, Janice Burgess, who just taught me a lot about treating writing for little kids with as much respect as writing for older kids.
One of the untold stories for me about the animation world and television has been how we are seeing a huge growth over the last 2 decades with women. Women being producers, women being executive producers, show creators, et cetera, especially women of color. How do you see the role of women right now in animation? How is it now, and where do you see it going?
Well, I'll start by saying that when I first wanted to be doing animation writing, I used to watch shows when I was, you know, sitting in my my own apartment dreaming about this as a career, and I would look for writers who had women's names, and there were, like, none of them. Like, I could not see myself there, and I kept thinking, well, maybe this isn't the world for me. And then I started to see a woman's name named Sue Rose, who was doing a show for Disney called Pepper Ann, and I loved the writing on it. And I got very lucky. She ended up hiring me for my first job out here in L.A., and I really kind of worked with her and became a part of her team of writers, which was fantastic. And when I first started writing, I thought, you know, the problem with my name is that it's Chris Nee, and you think that, and it's a radio audience, so you, my name says that I'm an Asian male, and I am not. So I went through a period where I thought, I think I have to change my name to Christine to put on my credits, because I want other girls to know that I'm writing animation. But then when the credits would come up, I never felt ownership. It just never felt like me, so I did switch it back. But it was definitely, there were not women doing this back then. And now I feel like they're all over the place, and hopefully we're starting to see that trickle down to the characters on TV as well. And because I think it just is an obvious extension. If you don't have women in these positions, you're not going to have as many strong girls on shows. So I hope it keeps going in that direction. Doc is an African American little girl, and I'm very excited about that. I'm excited about showing a girl at all. In a doctor's coat, who's a kid who you can imagine is someday going to make, you know, going to be in the 1% as a doctor. Well, maybe not the 1% for doctors anymore, but I'm very excited about that as a role model.
And that's the thing, is that until, I'd say, late 80s, early 90s, you didn't have women producing shows, creating shows, animating shows, directing shows, writing shows. You had maybe one a great move, like a Margaret Loesch, who was at one point the executive producer, the head of Hanna-Barbera, which, of course, created, like, you know, the great Cartoon Factory. But I think one of the big breakthroughs for me was 1991, 21 years ago, when Nickelodeon premiered Doug, Rugrats, and Ren and Stimpy. And if you read the credits, all three had women producers. And
yes,
they were all
they did,
three greater shows.
And Mary Harrington was one of the people who was very influential in those, who's a, you know, sort of icon in the animation world, and I've worked quite a bit with her too, and those are the people who really went out and started making sure that there were women doing this. And in fact, now there's a really strong group of women who are writing on things like Ben 10 and the Transformers, and that's the next step to me, is that now there's a very strong group of women, Charlotte Fullerton and Nicole Dubuque, who are writing the action shows, and that's also going to be the next step of really getting all of these different voices into the animation world.
And I also want to point out Vanessa Coffey, who was the executive producer on Doug, Rugrats, Ren and Stimpy, all three, who gave the green light to get that whole project off the ground for Nick back in that trio of shows back in 1991. By the way, in terms of diversity on your crew, how is it going? How are you in terms of having writers of color, musicians of color, you know, all up and down the line?
Well, we definitely have, in particular, the voice actors are, you know, we make sure that we're using voice actors who are the ethnicity of the characters on our show, and we have a very heavy African-American show. A lot of our research department is African-American, and obviously we're looking for the best people to do the job, but we're a show that's about trying to put a different face on diversity, so we're always looking for it behind the scenes as well.
One more thing, Chris. Was there any added pressure doing the show knowing that you're first out of the gate right when the network launches a week from today?
Thankfully, I did not know that when we got started. But I think it would have been a great thing because I think the hard thing when you're working on a show, it's such a long process of pure passion and love, sweat, and tears. And you don't know how strongly your own network's going to get behind it, and you just hope that you're going to catch someone's eye so that you can get a decent push. I mean, there sometimes shows just don't quite get the love, and it's very hard for them to get traction. There's so many places to watch media at this point. So I mean, for us, we hit the lottery, and we didn't know it until much further down the line. We certainly have been finishing the shows knowing that this was what was happening, and I think it only helps you go that extra mile. Although this was a show where everybody kind of stood up and did their best job, but it's awfully nice to know it's not going to go unseen, because you do make shows that you work just as hard as the shows that do get recognition, and then like literally nobody sees them, and it's a little heartbreaking, but that's the business too, I guess.
Along with having fun, what do you hope kids will get along with their parents out of seeing your program?
Well, I mean, like I said, this is a very personal show. My son had to spend a lot of time at the doctors, and I am hoping that I'm hoping to bring a little comfort to some kids and to make that not such a scary place. My son, Theodore, had his five-year checkup in October, and he was getting his checkup, and the doctor said, "All right, Theo, we're going to take your blood pressure now." And she reached for the blood pressure cuff, and he flinched. And I looked at him, I said, "Theo, you know what a blood pressure cuff is?" And he stopped, and he thought about it, and he said, "Oh, yeah, I've seen Doc McStuffins use it on Sir Kirby, who's a little plastic knight." And he smiled and relaxed and let her do it. And I got teary. I thought, that's the moment I was creating the show for. All the other stuff is the stuff that I always look for in writing for kids, the sense of fun and joy and storytelling and wish fulfillment and great songs. But that's what I'm hoping. I'm hoping to help support kids in living a healthy life, but just have this thing that is a part of their life. They're all going to go to the pediatrician. They're all going to get splinters and scrapes, and I just want to make that an easier process for them.
Doc McStuffins starts making house calls a week from today on the premiere of Disney Junior, 24/7 network, available on cable and satellite systems all over the country. Check your local listings for the channel, which Disney Junior will run in your area. In many markets, it will run at the same channel as SoapNet, which is going off. For more details about the show and the channel, here's where you go on the web, www.DisneyJuniorTheChannel.com. That's www.DisneyJuniorTheChannel.com. Chris Nee, the creator and executive producer of Doc McStuffins, thanks for joining us. Pleasure to have you aboard. Congratulations on getting the show off the ground, and hopefully a great run in store.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Same here. Have a great weekend.
Great. You too. Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Absolutely. Erin Gobrah. Chris Nee joining us live from Los Angeles. Monday on Tomorrow Be Televised, we hope to have a guest from the new Kiefer Sutherland series, Touch. It premieres on Fox Thursday night. Also, more on Disney Junior from its chief executive, programmer Nancy Kanter. And we'll have more about the world of interactive and connected and smart TVs from its senior vice president, David Adams. Coming up a week from today on the program, among our guests, senior vice president of another interactive player, Active Video Networks, Edgar Galipiando. We'll talk to him about interactive TV, about the use of the cloud in ITV, and also about ITV and people of color. That's all coming up next week, 3:10 Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Don't forget, you can always catch us on our homepage, www.blogtalkradio.com/SimonApple04. Also on podcast, 24/7. At iTunes.com and other websites arranged by Sonobite. We'd love to hear from you as well. What do you think about our show? What do you think about the world of television, about Facebook becoming a place for new TV series? Email me at SimonApple04@Yahoo.com. That's SimonApple04@Yahoo.com. Please enclose your name and where you're emailing from. You can also use the group page on, guess where, Facebook, Tomorrow Be Televised by name. Either way, sound off, because what you say is important. It matters. The views presented on this program are those of the participants, not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio. Our production associate is Matt Bader. Podcast distribution provided by Sonobite. Words to your ears. More at www.sonobite.com. Podcast director and theme music composer, Philip Salisbury. For Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a wonderful St. Pat's weekend. If you're doing some partying, please drink responsibly. Have a designated driver. We'll catch you back here Monday, 3:10 Eastern, noon Pacific, right here. Blog Talk Radio. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned. Erin Gobrah.